Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're listening to the sound of London. This is London Is Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and with the sunshine upon us and the opportunity for physical exercise beckoning with its finger in this week's show, my guest nearly persuaded me to go for a jog. This is the healthy way to see secret London. And, well, for a show about jogging, this episode contains a surprising amount of material about zombies and death. Before we head out, a couple of bits I've been meaning to share with you for ages in response to various shows. Going back to our episode on the East End French, Harry Kidd says, I'm a weekly follower of your podcast, using it to find places and events to see during my forthcoming visit to London. I found the East End French podcast extremely interesting. Mention was made that the Huguenots' major emigration was in the 1690s, but they weren't the first. Reading Samuel Pepys' diary, you learn that his wife, Elizabeth Saint-Michel, was Huguenot, and her parents and brother Balti had been in London for some time. I believe her father, like Pepys, was a tailor. He really gets everywhere, doesn't he? Frankel trimmings came up in one of our podcasts, and you remember that's the very strangely shaped building in Bethnal Green. ADGB and Disgust tells us that it's a former cinema, opened in 1913 as Sharp's Picture House and remodelled in the 30s. It remained a cinema until 1964. Then it became a bingo hall, and that was through till 1990. Since then, it's been the fabric warehouse it is today. And this year, ADGB says it will follow the sad, inevitable fate of nice old buildings in East London. It's becoming, yes, you've guessed it, flats. But at least the frontage is being retained, and it's not becoming ugly, boring, glass-fronted boxes. Finally, Larry Borges of National Geographic fame, who's responding to our Look Up London episode when we were talking about the insignia that banks chose, and we passed a bank that used squirrels. He says, not basing this on any research, but it seems to me that the reason that many early banks chose ferocious symbols instead of, for example, squirrels, is that early banks were most likely very tenuous affairs, and they wanted to get the point across that they would aggressively protect your money from all comers. I should say as well, by the way, that Larry was the brains behind our excursion to Lourdes, and he's thought of a couple of other excellent suggestions that we're following up, thanks to all three of our correspondents. OK, running shoes on, let's get some exercise.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sounds you ain't never seen the like before, just a stone's throw from your front door.
Well, hello, hello, listener, from the churchyard of a church that I am told is St. Mary's, and it's on St. Mary Axe, and we are in the shadow of the cheese grater. Just around the corner is the gherkin, and in front of me, two slightly smaller structures, Amy Coates and Vanessa Kane. Hello.
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 Now, we can't tell anybody what we're doing here.
It's a big secret.
Yes, secret London runs.
That's right.
About to become less secret. What is the premise of Secret London Runs?
We are a running tour company. We do running tours and events.
This is genius. Ah, okay, I instantly understand you. So in order to pack more people in on your tours, you do them faster and you make everyone run?
Not quite, no. We like to think of the running tour as a way of getting people to see the side of London with the joy of their own endorphins.
That sounds really dodgy.
No, It could be. No, we combine jogging with sightseeing, so sight jogging. And it's getting pretty big all around the world. There's sight jogging companies in most cities, but there's not really that much up and running in London.
We decided
to get in on it because Vanessa and I have always loved running and history. So what better pair to set up a sight jogging company?
I've got a big question mark in my mind about the term sight jogging. Because sightseeing, you see the sight. Mm. Sight jogging, you don't...
You jog a little bit and then have a stop. And then we'll explain one of the really cool stories about one of the sites that we're at. And when you jog, it means you can cover more ground than you would on a walking tour. And you can, of course, go down those cool, crooked London alleys and streets that you wouldn't see if you were on a bike tour or a bus tour. So it's just the best of all worlds.
I'm going to be exploring virtually because there's no way I'm trying to record this whilst jogging with you. That didn't even cross my mind as an option for this interview, by the way.
How'd you do it?
did you consider that as a possibility, by the way? Am I the only one not to have thought of that as an idea for this?
We hoped you might.
Oh, no. I'm sorry to dash your hopes.
Maybe next time.
Maybe not. We're going to be remaining entirely stationary. But we'll dig into some of the places that you go to. What are the practicalities, though, of doing your tours in this way? I'm thinking particularly of the necessary health requirements of the attendees.
Well, I think we make it so that anyone can do it, really. So we have power walking options. And actually, I broke my leg just after setting up this company, which was a bit tricky.
Yeah, seriously?
Yeah.
How did you break your leg?
At the office Christmas party. It wasn't very clever.
No, I've got to know more.
I'd had a bad day, and...
What, before you broke your leg?
Before I broke my leg. It was only about 9 o'clock, and I remember saying to people, it's short and sharp tonight, guys. And then on my way getting into a taxi, I fell off my heel, and it just snapped down a curb, and that was that.
On the way home as well, which
was
the
saddest part. Yeah, I'd already decided that it was time to go.
I need to get my head around this then. So you're doing another job at this point? You've kind of already set up Secret London Runs?
Yes, exactly.
What was the idea then, that you're going to depart your day job?
Well, we both just have, actually, haven't we?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What have you departed?
Well, I'm head of copy in an advertising agency.
And I head up a marketing team in a publishing company.
And sight jogging is what you came up with? Well, okay.
We've both been working in our fields for kind of 5 or 6 years now, and last year we launched Secret London Runs, and it's just gone so well, more than we could have hoped. So every time we start working on it, it doesn't feel like work. So we decided to give it a proper go, and that's why a month ago we handed in our notices and we've gone full on.
Well, it was getting to the point where we both worked really hard in our jobs, and then we were also working really hard on Secret London Runs. So, I mean, the thing that's been taking up most of our time is that we are doing lots of events, which are like murder mystery events. So we have to learn all the history of that area and time period, then kind of write a murder mystery book, and then work out how during a run you could meet suspects and witnesses and discover who the murderer is.
So you've got three businesses in one.
No, that's all part of Secret London.
No, I understand that, but you've got the murder mystery thing, which for some people that would be enough, and and the runs,
yeah,
and the history guided tours, all as one thing.
Yeah.
Why on earth are you taking on so much?
Well, it came hand in hand, really. We had a launch event, of course, when we first started, and it just went so well that we decided to do events as a more regular thing. One drives the other, really. But having events is so easily publicised in all the kind of London listing guides that it drives people to our website, and it drives and we get loads of TripAdvisor reviews. We're number 20 out of
25 now,
yeah, it's a recency thing, out of 161 things to do, outdoor things to do in TripAdvisor, and that's mostly thanks to reviews. We've got, I'd say, 80% from our events, so it brings in the traffic for us for the tours.
And I think what we realised when we started doing the tours and testing them out on our friends was that everybody spends all their time in London, and they just don't notice anything. And so we realised that actually possibly our bigger market was Londoners rather than just tourists, and that by making it into a fun fitness challenge rather than just a tour where there are loads of them, then we were tapping into something quite unique.
That whole idea of tours being for old people and tourists, we want to make that a thing of the past, you know, and get people to realise the history that lies under their feet and they'd never otherwise know about.
Should we go on a virtual tour?
Yeah.
Let's do a tour.
Okay.
But I do mean virtual.
Right.
You are not getting me running. I'm going to blame it on the very delicate equipment I've got here.
So this was our first tour that we launched, and it was because we were really struck, quite like here really, where there's a big building like the Gherkin and then an old building like St Mary's Church. The Shard is this sort of beacon of luxury, but actually the history of the area is so sordid. It's anything but luxury. So we decided that we'd run a tour about the gentrification of the area, and we called it In the Shadow of the Shard. So we start off...
Well, Borough Market.
London Bridge.
Yeah. The north side.
So from there you get a really beautiful view of the Shard, which could be seen, like Vanessa said, as a kind of nail in the coffin of what Southwark and Bermondsey used to be like, in a way. Because running from the north to the south throughout the whole of the Middle Ages up until the 19th century was kind of making this route from relative luxury down to kind of the things that the north of the city didn't want, the unwanted activities, the brothels, the unlicensed theatres, the
joggers.
Well, these days, I'm not sure how. I think jogging only became fashionable in the 50s, really.
Yeah, you wouldn't jog in a rough, would you? Too much wind resistance. I should just establish, though, as you imparting this historical context, are you doing so over your shoulder as you're jogging?
Oh, it depends, really. I mean, we really have to judge on our customers, and if. I had a lady who was on, it was her 62nd birthday, and
it was her present to herself for her birthday. It was so nice,
and she could run and talk and stuff, and that was absolutely fine. And on the other hand, I've had, you know, a group of girls in their early 20s, and we needed to stop, have a good stop, catch their breath, and that was great because I could, you know, talk to my heart's content about the different stops and stories that on our way. It's just a kind of a judgment thing. I think everyone's grateful for a little bit of a stop, and that way you can have a really good look. And sometimes it's tricky getting around groups of people along the South Bank, which is where we go along, and Southwark's pleasure gardens in past years, and so there are lots of people around there near the anchor, you know, enjoying the view in the evening.
So we've looked at the Shard now, and now we're going to make that crossing over into dirty Southwark. As we go over, we're running now. This is nice, so we're still all running.
Even if it's on the spot, I'm not doing this.
And sometimes we have to stop at the traffic light to wait for it to go, and then I'll just tell people a little about Bishop John Fisher.
Yeah.
1535, and that around that kind of time, they used to really make an example of the criminals.
And traitors
to the throne and all sorts of bad behaviour. So they would chop off people's, when they beheaded people, they would put them on spikes on the south end of London Bridge to scare people away. And this macabre scene attracted crowds of people, which added to the already thick, heavy traffic on London Bridge. It was the only way to cross from the north and south of the river for many years. So Bishop John Fisher, do you want to explain the tale of...
So he was beheaded for treason, and when he was...
What did he do?
He refused to acknowledge Henry VIII as the head of the Church of England.
Oh, yeah, that's a good move, isn't it?
So he was there on a spike, and obviously most of the heads got pretty manky by the end of their time there, but John Fisher got fresher and fresher every day, to the point that he looked even nicer than when he was alive.
Maybe he really didn't look very nice when he was alive.
or maybe these are myths, but apparently it attracted so much attention that London Bridge was in gridlock because of all the traffic coming over to look at John Fisher's head. One of the locals had to just pop his head in the Thames when no one was looking, one so night. That service could resume.
Didn't they do the same thing with David Blaine when he was doing his box stunt by Tower Bridge? I'm pretty sure somebody tried to knock him into the Thames. Anyway, that need not concern us right now. over the bridge we go.
So we're up, So now we're crossing the road, the traffic light's done,
through Borough Market, along to the medieval palace.
How many people have you got jogging behind you at this point?
Oh, it depends. I mean, up to 10 we've had in before. But generally it's a 1 or 2 or 3 people. That's the popular kind of number.
Because people get a little bit unreasonable when they see when they get disturbed, when they get flummoxed, don't they? I could imagine a number of joggers bearing down on them could produce some reactions.
Well, no, I mean, one of the things we say at that outright is, you know, be respectful of people. It gets busy in these bits. We purposely try and pick a route that our tours are, you know, a bit quieter and those times of day.
So we do promise people on the tours that it is busy for a little bit, and please be patient, because we're going to be just going up the nooks and crannies after a while. So,
but I think it's common, a lot of joggers who like running in the city like running in the city, but get annoyed with the tourists and the people and crowds, and that's not really a good way of going about things. So we just try and make sure we're quite respectful and don't go too close to people's personal space and things.
So we were through Borough Market.
And we're at Winchester Palace, which was kind of the reason for a long time that Southwark was as it is. So have you seen Winchester Palace?
What's left of it, yes.
Yeah.
One sort of end wall, really, isn't it?
So the Bishop of Winchester used to have his summer residence there, and he was one of the richest bishops because of this residence. And so Southwark was the liberty of the clink at the time. It meant that it was outside of the jurisdiction of the city. So it meant that things that were illegal in the city of London were permitted in and regulated in Southwark, in the liberty of the clink. So the bishop was the guy that ruled over it, and he allowed prostitution to take place, and that was like a huge source of income for him. So there were 39 regulations about the prostitution there. So some of them were kind of quite progressive in that they were trying to protect the women, so trying to protect them from the stew holders from taking advantage of them.
Stew holders?
Brothel. So the brothel owners. So, and then there were others that would illegalised the prostitutes having sex for love. So if it wasn't for money, then... So having sex for love could get you dipped in the... was it the ducking stall?
Yeah, raw sewage.
That's an amazing thought crime. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, it's horrendous. You should read this. 39 regulations. Lots of them were put together because when lots of the soldiers started coming back from the Crusades, they were bringing back with them lots of diseases, and so lots of them were to protect people from that. So all the prostitutes had to have a 3-monthly checkup, and if they were found having sex with a disease, then they'd be banished from the liberty of the clink. It's a mad set of rules. We kind of became so fascinated by the Bishop of Winchester and his role over the liberty of the clink that in our launch event we had a murder mystery called Who Killed the Bishop of Winchester. So we had quite a lineup because of all of the things that he allowed and all of the people he would have upset by doing so.
It's really tragic. Sex work was considered a necessary evil back in those times. It's something we find it so hard to consider, even understand now, but to prevent men harassing good women.
Yeah, so the Catholic idea in that time, well, I've read that it was the Catholic idea anyway, was that Southwark's brothels were kind of a necessary evil. The men of the city were going to need to express their urges, and so better to do it on a Southwark whore than on a good woman of the city. So
yes, I imagine it was the men who were saying that.
One would have thought, wouldn't one?
It seems difficult to imagine you imparting all of this whilst on the move, but on the move we are.
There should be a stop just outside what remains of the Winchester Palace and the old clink prison.
And then off we run along the south bank, which would have been lined with brothels up until the 1600s.
So the ferrymen would have made an absolute killing transporting men from the city over to the south of the river, as I said earlier, Southwark's pleasure gardens, to spend a night there. And they would have made a rip-roaring trade. So along we run down to
the Crossbones graveyard.
Ah, yes, Crossrail has, well, sealed it off, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And now there's a lovely garden there for the Friends of the Crossbone Graveyard.
and the ribbons flapping from the fencing there.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked a little bit about that in previous episodes, so let's keep running.
All right, well, so then we go down Red Cross Way, which back in the Middle Ages would have been one of the dangerous streets in London to run down. And
into the 1800s, really, that was when it was horrendous. So,
do we know why it's called Red Cross?
No.
Ah, intriguing.
Do you?
No. Oh, but I know somebody who does. The listener, can you help? I wonder if it's some reference to death or some blood. I don't know. So, is the Catholic cross red? The English cross is red.
I'm not sure. But the Crossbones graveyard by the end was a plague pit. And that was around the 1800s when it closed. And so as you run up it, then you would just imagine just all this disease coming out all of the doors. And the idea of giving any kind of help to the poor was quite alien until very late on into the 1880s and 1890s, really. So when we run past Red Cross Gardens.
Yeah, where Octavia Hill, who founded the National Trust, was a really progressive figure. And she realised that creating an open space within these kind of slum areas, really poverty-stricken areas, would give people a kind of sitting room for the tired and people who just need a rest, really. And that's what she did, and that's what Red Cross Gardens is, and there's a blue plaque for her there. And it really opened up the area and started to give people, to break it up and make it less dangerous.
And it's still beautiful today. And then we run on up Mint Street and along to Lant Street.
Have we lost any runners yet?
No, they're all still going along.
None of them starting to weave and hold their chest.
No, everyone's really happy and just, you know, holding on to our every word, really.
That podcast presenter at the back's looking a bit ropey.
Yeah, he's fine, okay. He can do it. There's a stop coming up really soon.
Although I have heard that there's a geocache on Red Cross Way, so I did lose one runner one time who had to go and find it.
What is a geocache?
Oh, we've got a blog about it on our website.
Sorry, but a question from the 19th century here. What is a geocache?
I can't go into too much. It's quite a secretive thing. People have it as a hobby. There are geocaches based around the whole world, really, and loads in London. And it's kind of like a tiny cache where you have to go and find it. Some of them have little trinkets in them, tiny trinkets, and you record, you log that you've been there.
Is this a virtual thing or an actual, like
it's
an Easter egg hunt?
Thing, yeah.
So you log it virtually.
So you're digging it up and go, oh, there's a little plastic gnome in there.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Right. It's in like little boxes or hidden away.
And it encourages people to get out and have a look around their space. Kind of what we're doing, really.
Yeah.
And family thing as well.
There's something a little surreal about that, isn't there? That it feels like a very 21st century thing, that you're jogging along with a group of people and one of them has to duck out because they're on in the middle of an Easter egg hunt at the same time.
I think it's lovely.
Meanwhile,
we found the plaque for Charles Dickens, who lived on Lant Street. So when we're there, we say,
this is where Charles Dickens
lived.
and he wrote that he had the
miserable time of his life.
He lived there when he was up to the age of about 12.
When he was 12, for 8 months.
What was so awful about that?
Well, what we say there is, we're going to tell you at the next stop. Then we run on to the next stop.
I'm all expectation.
And we run along a little alleyway that you would never really know, very unsuspecting. And what's down there is what remains of the Marshalsea prison. A huge wall with the gardens inside, which are a very nice, pleasant place to be. But back in the 18th century, it would have been far from pleasant. It was one of the biggest prisons in South London, south of the river, and it was one of five within a mile radius of that spot. It was right in the middle of a very deprived area, and it was a rough place to be.
So in 1812, 50% of the prison population was debtors. Debtors were institutions that meant that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That were made to make their owners money.
Wasn't Dickens' father a debtor?
So that was why Dickens lived on Lant Street around the corner, because the rest of his family, bar his sister, were all imprisoned in the debtors' jail for 10 months. I think I said 8 months before, but it was 10.
Right.
So he had a debt with a baker, and that meant that he was inside the prison for 10 months. So they'd make it so that the people that had enough money to live would be able to spend their money in taverns and on different things inside the jail. And you were really desperate to try to stop going over into the side where you were begging for your meals.
There's a wonderful book called The Devil in the Marshalsea, and it's a beautiful piece of historic fiction and just absolutely brings to life what life would have been like in that prison. Horrendous on both sides of the wall, but particularly horrendous on that side of the wall.
What have you come away from that book with in terms of detail?
Bad dreams. Well, I mean, it was quite a normal sight back then for somebody to, in the city, wherever else in London, suddenly be shackled up, put in chains and dragged, put on a ferry over down to the Marshalsea. And that's kind of the start of the book, really. And then it goes on to talk about the tavern where they could drink some really weak, horrible ale if they wanted to, and the candles were made of pig fat and it stunk, and there's a scene where he doesn't understand why nobody's sitting next to the only window in the tavern. You know, there's a balcony there, great. And he goes and looks, and he looks over the other side of the wall, and there's people walking around like zombies, just skeletal figures, a couple out laid in the sunshine, dead, and that's what life was like on the other side of the wall.
And this is 150 odd years ago.
Yeah, so as soon as you...
A bit more than that, but...
Yeah, 200 years ago. So as soon as you could no longer benefit financially the people that owned it, you were just shoved in like a dog with a seat on the other side of the wall.
One of my favourite things about that book is how he describes knowledge as currency back then. So if you had a tip-off for somebody, then you might be able to get a favour back from them, and it was usually the keeper of the keys and the guards who you'd be able to, you know, send letters or get a few cigarettes.
Just on that idea of information, because we've sort of been through and come out the other side of an information age, haven't we, in probably the 80s, 90s, and information's kind of free now. You know, with the internet, anything you could possibly want to know, you can know instantly. So it struck me that what you're doing here is finding a new and interesting way to dress up knowledge, really, you know, a different delivery mechanism.
Not necessarily dress up, but...
No, dress up was an unfair term.
But get people to really understand it. And people, I think the term narrative is really overused in creative industries these days, but there's a reason for that. And people can know, you can't ever know what it was like, but you can kind of get a feel for it if you immerse yourself in that history. And London is just a fascinating place because that history is there on the streets for you to see and to experience.
And what I love and hate about it is that the more you learn about it, the more you realise you don't know. So it means that there's years worth of fun, but it means that it's not something that we're going to nail overnight.
So we run to Horsemonger Lane Jail, which was also the site of executions. So back in the day, they would have drawn crowds of up to 20,000 people to come and watch the executions. And as you know, it would have been a huge public party. Basically, there would have been jesters and music and drinking and rowdiness to watch people be hanged. And do you know what that communal feeling the next day might have been like? What might have been like when the whole village was suffering after a day of festivities the previous day? Can you think of a word for that?
Oh, yes, hanged over.
Exactly. So that's where our word for hungover comes from.
Oh, very interesting.
Oh,
is that official?
Yeah, that's where comes from. Oh, well, many, many of our trips down the rabbit hole, as it were. When we're researching our tours and events, it's so easy to just get lost in history and Wikipedia pages and books. And so I can't say where I picked it up from, but somewhere.
So you two, I've got an image of you on a Sunday afternoon in the process of setting up Secret London Runs, leafing through many an encyclopedia. You two go way back, don't you?
Yeah, we met on our first day at university and we sort of fell in love.
Ever since, yeah. We actually lived next door to each other. But they just a huge coincidence.
Because we're Coates and Kane.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, is a good double act name.
It is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Maybe we'll...
one day.
Well, maybe already, just with a different name.
And can I just correct? You said on a Sunday afternoon delving through books. It's more like Monday at 2 a.m., Tuesday at 6 a.m. This, as Vanessa mentioned earlier, it's been a huge lot of work. And one of the best things about it is that our relationship as friends as well as business partners has just developed and changed and become something really lovely. So
lovelier.
Yeah, it's too much sycophancy going on there. Starting to feel nauseous.
Sorry. There's a bucket over there.
Meanwhile, having just executed some people.
Yes. Well, you can tell about a couple of the people who were executed on this.
I can't remember.
Oh, no.
I wrote that.
Whisper into a microphone.
No, it's the tour that I do. So,
I haven't really been able to do a tour since breaking the leg.
No, I wanted to ask about that. So you've just set the company up, hey, let's both run running tours.
Yeah.
And then
I
you
just,
go, no, I won't do that,
and
thank
I just
you.
Started to do this tour. And I love it.
So what do you do? Are you sitting in there like a wheelbarrow being pushed by you?
Wait, no. We did do that, didn't we?
When Vanessa's leg was broken, we wanted to practice a tour. So I had to wheel Vanessa around the tour while she...
In a wheelchair, not a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
Wheelsfreedom.com is like borrow a wheelchair, and they're amazing.
But did you not think that this was a major hole in your plan?
Vanessa's not like that.
I wrote to quite a few disabled meetup groups and asked them if they'd like to come on a wheelchair tour, and Amy would push me and we could all go, but they weren't very keen and they were like, it's the middle of winter, like we don't want to, our people don't want to go out in the cold.
And in hindsight, we probably needed special licenses and things.
Yeah,
that,
and as well, when we did do the tour, so we did it to practice with some friends that we'd met on Twitter, and Amy was yanking me up the curbs and wheeling me along the road.
Oh.
So in the shadow of the Shard is not disabled friendly.
No,
we realised
exactly.
On that one.
Yeah. Well, not that disability.
For our Christmas party, on the other hand, so this was shortly after Vanessa broke her leg. There was not even talk of cancelling it. Instead, I wheeled Vanessa from her house in South London up to the pub where we had our Christmas event, and off we went.
I crawled up the stairs. This was about 2 weeks after breaking my leg, so I crawled up the stairs, and at that event, all we had to do was just register the runners, give them their brief, and then they set off to do a challenge where they found the statues in the area. So it was fine. It was definitely broken leg friendly, that one.
Who have we executed down at Horse? Yeah, so what was it called? Horsemonger Lane.
Well, there's a couple of interesting executions there. I mean, the one that drew the biggest crowd was Edward Marcus Despard. That was 1803, and he was the last man in British history to be sentenced, hanged, drawn, and quartered. And he was a Protestant Irishman found guilty of high treason. And then another story, which got the nickname of the Bermondsey Horror, was Mary Manning and her husband, who were hung for...
Hanged.
Hanged for them. I'm a writer.
You were a writer.
Yes, good correction. So they both murdered her lover, Patrick O'Connor. And so, yeah, as I say, got the name of the Bermondsey Horror.
And they were the first married couple to be executed together in 150 years.
That was nice.
Lovely.
How romantic. Yeah. Very special way. And then we go on to...
What were the dates of this?
So that was 1803 for Edward Marcus Despard, and 1849, Mary Manning and her husband.
Alarming recently.
Recent history, we're talking, and it was by no means the most heavily used execution site. Up in Marble Arch, which was the Tyburn Tree, was a gallows that could house 28 people all to be executed at once, and that was probably the biggest execution site. And that features in one of our other tours, the Riches, Royals and Rumours tour, which is the other side of it, which lets people experience and explore the other side of the Buckingham Palace, Westminster, Mayfair area. So, you know, while I'm doing the tour, I often see groups of tourists and tour guides looking at Buckingham Palace and how many rooms it has and how often they have to cut the grass in St James's Park. But this is, our tours are very different from that. It's the real bit grimier history of the areas.
Yeah, that's an appalling thing to imagine, isn't it? 28 people being dispatched. That's 24. Industrial.
Yeah, 24. Yeah,
24.
Industrial scale. And I mean, the people who were to be hanged were almost
hanged?
Celebrities. People to be hanged were seen as almost celebrities back then. I mean, they were notorious, some of them. And so people would line the streets all the way from the Old Bailey up to Tyburn, giving them ale and bread and cake along the way. As I say, it was a hanging parade. And they got to the point where... So the bodies were promised to anatomists, who would, of course, use them for their own research. But the families didn't like this very much. So when the bodies were cut down and the anatomist and medical students would rush to try and grab a hand or a leg, the families would come out and fight with them, and it would just be a huge scene. So hanging parades were banned in the mid-19th century. If you think about it from the perspective of how people felt about the royal family, it wasn't always so... I mean, of course, nowadays everyone has got their own opinion about the royal family, but protests against the decisions of the government and the royal family were not a new thing. That's been going on for years and centuries and centuries, of course. So the people who didn't agree with government and the royals and the wealthier people were themselves heroes of their own subcultures. So yeah, it's not like everyone thought they were doing wrong. In fact, on the contrary, I think it was widely acknowledged that there was a lot of crookedness within the police and of course the bishops.
You just gestured at Vanessa there when you said the bishops. Well, is there something I don't know?
I am a bishop.
I should really have mentioned that in the intro, shouldn't
I? We for our launch event, one of the best actors that we had were Vanessa's own parents.
One of the best actors you had?
The best pair of actors we had. So Vanessa...
I imagine them playing one character, you know, like a pantomime horse or something.
Next time.
Goliath or something. No, I'll let Vanessa tell you.
They dressed up as the Archbishop of Canterbury and his favourite nun, because my mum wanted a part, even though... But she wanted to stand with my dad, so...
she was a nun.
Thus immediately invoking scandal.
So he was William Warham. And William Warham, he kind of wore black and then just a brown bit of fur around him. I sent my dad a picture and I asked him if he'd got something similar. And
please say no, Dad. Please say no.
Well, oh, Dad said, I'll see what I can do. He went away and he arrived in this really ornamental bishop's dress. So it was cream and golden with a blue cross. He'd made a big hat that kept blowing off and all the runners had to go into the row to get it.
This was clearly the moment he'd been waiting for a long time.
He was amazing. Yeah, and my mum was a nun, and together they were just this double act that everyone came back and were like, who were the bishop and the nun? They were amazing.
What are your parents' professions?
They're both retired.
There's too much time on their hands, really.
My dad plays croquet and tennis and badminton a lot. And my mum actually spends a lot of time, well, they both do spend a lot of time with the church, which is how they managed to get such fantastic outfits.
Well, actually, your mum hired it from the costume shop, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes,
she did. It's a nun outfit. And didn't they have a special party going on the same day when they went to hire the outfits?
They thought that my mum were off to a Tarts and Vickers party.
Or the Tarts and Vickers party that was happening in Wellingborough on that evening.
Well, I don't know what I expected when I met up with you, but we've gotten way off-piste.
Do you want us to finish the virtual
tour
in one sentence?
Yeah.
Not one sentence.
Well, how many sentences would it normally take?
If we keep going like this.
Should we talk about the thing that Bermondsey was really popular
for? So then we pop into Bermondsey, and just to summarise, we point out a few things on the way which show that Bermondsey was the centre of leather for hundreds of years. And so leather was like quite a dirty trade because it was made from urine and feces, and Charles Dickens described it as really
made from
Charles Dickens.
Human leather. I don't know what the Human Tissue Authority would say about that. But I've actually got an extract from Charles Dickens Jr.'s book, which really lovelily sums up what life would have been like in the slums in Bermondsey. Do you mind if I... We read this on the tour, and people usually really like this bit. So he says, the neighbourhood in which it... And this is the leather exchange... the neighbourhood in which it stands is devoted entirely to thinners and tanners, and the air reeks with evil smells. The population is peculiar, and it is a sight at 12 o'clock to see the men pouring out from all the works. Their clothes are marked with many stains, their trousers are discoloured by tan. Some have apron and gaiters of raw hide, and about them all seems to hang a scent of blood. So I think that's a really nice way of kind of getting a feel for what the area would have been like and smelled like and how gross it would have been.
And so all the wealthy moved out of Bermondsey and it was just filled with all the leather workers. So there was usually, I think they averaged 5 to a room, or have you read that somewhere?
Smelling like that.
Yeah. So we show a few different things that show some of the aid that the people got there. The Arthur's Mission on Snowfields, and the Guinness Trust buildings as well. And then we go, and there are still quite a few signs in Bermondsey that show the leather industry was there. There's some stones that for the leather exchange that still show the leather making process on them. There's a horse up from a farrier's that's now a garage, but it shows that that's where the horses were to go when they were coming into London after their travel to get their shoes mended.
Because the shoes were made of leather as well, so the farriers had a roaring trade there too.
And then we sort of end the tour. We kind of recognise it's miserable, so we end on...
Not the tour.
The
tour is miserable.
The tour's quite miserable, isn't it? It's quite a grim history. So we end on Bermondsey Street, which is one of my favourite streets because it's this buzzing street of independence. And it might sound cheesy, but I kind of think that, you know, all this struggling to survive of all these different people has left with a air of
entrepreneurial spirit.
Entrepreneurial spirit that, you know, it's just this whole row of all these different shops where, you know, two people are walking their dogs together and they decided to set up a shop with dog collars and little dog coats. And, you know, every shop or most of the shops, they have just opened DeFranco Mancas on there. But, you know, most shops are these entrepreneurial delights, and it makes you think that there's hope.
And also reminds you about just how the area is becoming gentrified as well. I mean, the old industrial buildings are now chic apartments and shared working spaces and things. So
no more sense of blood.
No, exactly. Far from it. So in, you know, kind of 20th century, it just rapidly became something quite different. And there was an antiques market that that moved there, and that was part of the reason for the attracting a wealthier crowd. And it's all just part of the area's history, but like Vanessa says, it's this kind of charming entrepreneurial spirit, struggle to survive, that is still there.
That sounds like a natural stop to me, but not before we've mentioned what you've got coming up. I think I'm going to take massive issue with one of the things you've got coming up, but let's see.
Well, the power women. Week.
Power women? No. Why would I have why would I object to power women? What are power women?
So we're running a week of guided running tours for London's Power Women Week to celebrate all the women who have shaped London's history. There are so many that we're going to pick 8 or 9 along an 8-kilometre route and celebrate them.
All played badly by your mother.
No, my mother won't be there.
Okay.
But my father.
Oh no.
No, this is just a guided tour, so no actors, I'm afraid, on that one. But we've got a power walking group going every day, so even if running isn't your thing, I still can't run after the broken leg, so I'll definitely be there heading up the power walking team and loving it. It'll be really fun. And then there'll be running groups as well. And we're meeting at the Boudicca statue every day from the 5th and the 9th of June for that at different times. And then after that, we've got our murder mystery run, which is a 5K team challenge where's it? Oh, we're killing off Henry VIII's lover, Elizabeth Blount, in a whodunit running challenge.
So that's on July the 14th. And you can get tickets to any of those events on our website, www.secretlondonruns.com.
Oh, that was good. I thought we were going to get into a Jack the Ripper fight.
Oh, no. That was our last event that we ran.
Right, OK. You've dodged a bullet that was heading your way.
We should probably say that if we've got anything historically wrong in this interview, then we always welcome corrections and input, suggestions and questions. There's an interpretation and different sides of stories. One of the really great things about doing the tours is that we're always getting input from our customers. Some people have got their own stories of London and what it used to be like, even when they were a child. And I just wanted to mention as well that if you listeners know that we've said something wrong or got something a bit inaccurate, then please do get in touch. We've got a contact us page on the website, so we would love to hear from you if you have any comments or suggestions.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave things. You know, we haven't said a thing about some of the most impressive architecture in the world that we're standing underneath right now, and we could do, but that's the joy of London, is that we can come back and do that another day. What a privilege. For now, though, Amy Coates, Vanessa Kane, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all for this week. Thanks for this week to Vanessa Kane and Amy Coates. Thanks too to Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm in Quentin Wolfe.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.